Hello and welcome to another You May or May Not Like It. I am your host, Scott, and you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX, and I'm here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. Today, we're going to have a little bit of a special, show, because we're not going to review any game in particular. What we're going to do is talk about International Tabletop Day, which was, well, at this point, about a week and a half ago. But we did go. We've just been kind of backlogged on podcasts. We're getting this one out now. Brian spilled his soda. So, also you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. You can find us on Instagram at instagram.com/reviewandroast/StarWarsTabletop or /TheComicRoast or me personally at /Slevin77. Tabletop day for us, we usually go to, you know, our local comic book store where we all get our comics every week because, you know, why not support the, you know, your stores? And our comic book store actually has a ridiculous amount of board games, A, for sale, B, for demoing purposes. So it's actually really kind of awesome to go to because it's a huge store and they always have at least 7 or 8 tables set up in the back and tons of people come out to play. It's a really good time. And I don't even remember what we played first. We got there and we immediately sat down. It was just Brian and I initially, and we sat down with what did we play first?
All right, well, first of all, I'm here, yay. Secondly, there's this game called Kingsburg.
Yes, that's what it was.
It's from Italy. It was originally brought over here by Fantasy Flight via the company Stratolibri Games from Italy. I've seen and read a ton of things online about how amazing this game is. I've always looked at it. The box art is really intriguing, and it always looked kind of in between for me. Like, kind of, it didn't look bad, but I was looking at like the back of the box where the components are, and I'm like, I don't know about this game. Like, it might be awesome, it might be just okay. But as the years have gone on, I keep hearing about how great it is. And I also found out there's a reprint coming later this summer from Stratolibri that includes all the expansions that are currently available in the base game, in addition to a small expansion that is brand new. So I was like, all right, I got to try this game because a lot of people are really excited about how great it is. And I want to feel that excitement. So I was like, Kingsburg, I'm going to learn it before we even leave the house. So I'm pretty well-versed. I don't have to read the rules for an hour and a half. So that's what we played first.
That we did. Did you explain the game at all? Or did you just talk about the history of the developers for 20 minutes?
I talked about the history of the development of the wagon wheel. And went from there. No. Basically, the game has 18... The whole thing... The story of the game is the king has 18 advisors. And you are building your village outside of the kingdom. That you're going to be part of the greater kingdom of Kingsburg, etc. So each player gets their own little player board. Which has 6 or 7 columns of 5 buildings apiece. Each building or structure, whatever you want to call them, is subsequently better than the one before it. You have to build left or right. So if you build the top leftmost building, you can build the second one and so on. It's hard to kind of explain.
You have to build in rows.
Basically, you have to build in rows. And, you know, like, depending on what kind of way you want to go, if you want to go heavy military, each building has got +1 defense, +2 defense, +1 defense, +4 defense, whatever. If you want points, you go for more of the culture type buildings. If you want to make more money, you go for like the market type buildings. Tons of options. And the game essentially plays where each player gets 3 dice in their player color. You play out through 5 rounds and 8 stages per round. So essentially you're playing 40 turns per game. You roll your three dice. You can spend them however you want, but however you spend them, you have to spend the exact amount to pay for a set advisor. So if you roll a three and a six, you can use the three, or you can use the six, or you can use the three and a six to use the nine. Each advisor, as they go up in number, give you better resources, benefits, whatever. But as everybody does it, you go around the board placing one at a time. So if you want to spread your dice out, you can try. But if you have a three, and I have, let's say I have a three, Scott has a three, but I decide to use the five first, and then Scott uses the three, I can either combine the three with my last die to use that if I can, or you end up losing the die. As the game goes on, you get the King's Helper, which can allow you to use, because once an advisor has been used, it's out for the round. But then there's ways to modify that. There's little chips that give you a plus two to your die roll. If you build a certain building, you can go plus or minus what you have. And that's essentially how you gain resources to build your buildings. You build your buildings to, because at the end of every year is when the monsters come, essentially. Combat is super laid back. It's not very aggressive. It's more passive. So essentially, you're just trying to build up your military points to stave off the goblin invaders.
Yeah, it's almost like they threw it in just to have it, I guess. Not so much just to have it. I mean, there are consequences, but nothing major. Like, if you don't do it, you're really not. All this is going to do is knock down one of your buildings, which, you know, can hurt you, but, you
well,
know.
It sucks because if you have your building built out to column four and you lose a building, you have to take your farthest outmost building and destroy it.
Yeah. Which is also the most expensive.
And you lose the points that you would have that you have gained prior to doing that. So that's kind of why you want to fortify your military, but at the same time, it's not a combat-heavy game at all for those who don't really like that.
Very much in the background.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel tacked on. I feel like it's...
And not to mention, especially in the first couple of rounds, you don't even really have to worry about it so much because there's always going to be one player who's going to roll the dice and everybody gets that added to their military. So you can only have eight anyway, but you know, the first couple of rounds, the monsters only have a strength of two, three, four. So if someone rolls a four or a five, you automatically get the four or five military in the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard to do the military hard.
Nah, maybe mostly in the last two rounds is where you actually want to build it up. But again, and there's modifiers. If you build the church when the monsters come out at the end of the year, if they happen to be demons, the church actually gives you a plus like two or three defense against demons, which is kind of neat.
Yep.
And then there's another one. If you build the library, it gives you like, I don't know, like stuff like that. So there's a whole bunch of different little add-ons that go with each building. It's I saw online what the second printing looks like. The graphic design is a little less fun. It's a little more realistic, but it comes with custom dice, which look amazing. And I feel like the board's cleaned up a little bit, so I'm going to wait for the reprint, because actually the game's super hard to find currently, but it'll be, like I said, it'll be back out by the end of summer, I think. But that game has rocketed to the top of my games I want to buy list. After one play, I was like, I officially love this game. I see exactly why everybody loves it. And, I mean, if we're throwing scores on these games, easily, after one play, I would, just for the sake of being safe, I will give it an 8.5.
What do you mean, the sake of being safe?
Well, you know, because, you know, some games, they tend to expose their weaknesses more and more as you play them. Perfect example, a game we'll be reviewing shortly-ish. Power Grid, the first time I played it, I was like, oh, I totally get why everyone loves this. Play it four or five more times, I'm like, I don't understand what the deal with this game is. It's actually kind of stupid. So now we don't have to review Power Grid. We will, though. But as I'm saying, like, some games they expose their, like, okay, Ticket to Ride. First time we played Ticket to Ride, I'm like, this game is excellent. Super simple, but super strategic at the same time. Totally get why it's a gateway game. And then maybe the third or four times in, I'm like, man, I really like this game, but I don't want to burn it out because I have a feeling it's going to get old. Well, turns out I was absolutely wrong. We've been playing Ticket to Ride on a regular basis now since, 2014 or so.
Yeah.
It has not lost its luster. And as a matter of fact, the game scales. I actually wouldn't even want to play Ticket to Ride with less than three players.
Yeah, with two people, it's actually, it's a little too easy to complete everything.
Yeah, because you got no competition for spots. But when you're playing a five-player game of Ticket to Ride, the game just, it hums so well. I mean, it's longer, but it's like five players is where it's at for Ticket to Ride. So that's what I'm saying. Like, some games, they scale well and they age well. Other games kind of show their wieners a little bit.
That was weird.
It's a little weird.
Anywho, yeah, Kingsburg was actually really fun. When we first started, I was like, I don't know about this game. But then when I realized how to actually play, I was pretty into it. I'll give it like an 8, just because, you know, one quick playthrough at the comic book store. Can't exactly get a perfect feel for it, but it's pretty sweet.
Ditto.
I want to say after that, we moved over and did that parade game.
Incorrect. But we can do parade anyway because we did play it that day.
Duh.
So we try to kind of alternate longer games with shorter games, kind of get as many games in. Because here's the thing. With Tabletop Day, every game you play, you get entered into the raffle, and they raffle off a ton of games, big, small, and medium. There were a couple of large games I had my eyes on, and I didn't get any of them because I'm an idiot. But the more games you play, the more raffle tickets you end up with. If you win, you get additional raffle tickets. So you could either turn them into the raffle or you could use them to get promos. I ended up getting one promo for Imperial Settlers. Anyway, so a lot of quicker, smaller games made more sense to kind of build up your raffle ticket presence. So anyway, Parade is a super small card game themed with the Alice in Wonderland universe. The theme is kind of slapped on there. There's really no rhyme or reason to it.
No, not at all.
Other than the whole idea of the game is every player gets five cards. Then you take the deck. You flip six cards in a row to make a parade. So I guess if the theme works at all, it's just seeing the characters from Alice in Wonderland kind of marching down the path together. Each player takes a card. They play it at the end of the parade. You take the number that you play, you count in towards the deck. If you say if you play a 7 and there's only 6 cards in front of you, you're good. You play a 2, you count in 2, and then the other 4 cards, you take all the 2s and all the cards of that color and add them to your hand. And then the cards move down and the next player goes, blah, blah, blah. The object
is... Well, you add them to the table. You don't add them to your hand.
Well, yeah. You add them to the table in front of you. The object of the game is to have the least amount of points. So you really don't want to collect cards. You want to kind of stay away from them. But there are two ways that you end up getting points. Because at the end, you collect the different colored sets of cards. And if I have 3 yellows, 3, a 7, and a 10, and Scott has 5 yellows... You know, a 1, 2, 4, 6, and 8. He'd flip his over, and now he has 5 points. I get face value of my yellows. So now I have 20 points. That's not what you want. You want, because the person who has the most amount of cards in each colored set turns that set over and gets 1 point per card. Everybody else gets face value. And then obviously, if you don't have any cards, you don't get points for that. So the object is to have the least amount of points. It's a lot harder than it sounds. And it's a stupidly easy game, but it's super fun. And I totally had low expectations for it.
I had damn near zero expectations for it till we actually played it. And I was like, this is super easy. And then you kind of get screwed a couple of times. You're like, all right, I guess there's a little more to it. But it's one of those games, like literally, if you're waiting for your group to get together and, you know, you're still waiting on someone, you ain't going to be there for 20 minutes. This is one of those games that's just going to be perfect to fill that time. It literally, you shuffle the deck of cards and deal everyone 5 and you're ready to go. Like, it takes zero time to set up and it takes 10 minutes to play, tops.
Yeah, and it's a Japanese card game. And I think it had a different theme when it initially came out. And I think when it came to America, they kind of put the Alice in Wonderland theme on it. Out of the Japanese card games I've played, there's a style to different regions of the globe when it comes to game making. American games tend to have a lot of combat, a lot of fantasy themes, a lot of TV and movie themes. Not always bad, though. Euro games tend to be more about constructing and building and trading and so on, which is really, like, my favorite thing. Japanese games tend to be more small box, more card-driven, a lot of bluffing, a lot of, you know, set collecting. And
almost
some of
the party-type games.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, there are a lot of micro. I have yet to see, like, a big box game developed in Japan. Like, even their deck builders tend to be more on the passive side of things. So, I mean, it depends. It's you gotta find that part of your game day or game week. They tend to be, to me, they tend to be games, like you said, to play. You're waiting on people, you're winding the night down, or if you game at work, you got a couple of coworkers, we got 20 minutes before we gotta go back, let's play a quick game of Parade. And out of the ones that I've played so far, and I've only played Love Letter, 8 Epics, I think it was called, there was that card game with the, it was like almost like, I don't want to say chess, but it was almost like chess, where I play a card, and then depending on what the power does, I might turn your cards facing me, or you might turn yours facing you, and then at
from the AEG box.
Yeah, all those games, I believe, were Japanese-developed games. Out of all the ones that I've played so far, this one's probably my favorite. And again, the Alice in Wonderland theme does nothing for me. I like the story, but I'm not super into it. I actually picked it because you are really into it. So I was like, oh, this might be kind of fun. Or it might suck. But, you know, raffle tickets. Trying to win Attack of the Giants here.
Right. I like raffle tickets.
Turned out, I think we played it like 3 times. It turned out to be way more fun than I expected.
Yeah. No, it was a great game for how cheap it was. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a $10, $15 game tops. Fits in your pocket, perfect travel game if you go on road trips, you go on vacations, that sort of thing. And to reiterate the Nick Offerman thing from his book, if you're married, you want to keep your relationship humming, you know, it's a good thing to do. Play cards with your significant other, kind of have a like quiet bonding moment, then go make out or whatever. It's good for that. Or family night, board a Yahtzee, let's play Parade. You could teach it to grandma in 5 minutes.
Yeah, grandma
might even like it. You never know. I would give this one, I'm not going to give it super high of a score, because honestly, you're not going to play it every weekend, and you're not going to be like, epic Parade night.
Right.
But I give it a 7.5. It's pretty, it's like I said, it's a good little compact, slightly thinky reverse card game.
I'm fine with that. About a 7 for me as well. It's just one of those quick, perfect little games. No, not perfect, but you know what I mean. All right, so which game did I skip then?
We skipped another one that I'm super high on after one play from Red Raven Games, the company owned, operated by one man by the name of Ryan Lockett, and that's Above and Below.
Right. Okay. I don't know why I thought that was later in the day.
No, that was like right after Kingsburg.
You're right. Yeah, this, I have to agree. It's a game I've eyeballed a lot over the last couple of years even. And every time I look at it, it's just one of those like, God, that looks neat. And what draws me to it is the artwork. But then you look at the artwork and it's like, man, it just looks like it's cartoony. Like it's for kids. Like, is it really going to be...
It makes me think of Little Big Planet from PlayStation.
I never played that.
I never played either, but it's the like where you're the sock puppet and you run around and do stuff. I don't know.
No idea. But yeah, it's basically one of those like, hey, we're going to build a civilization, i.e. a little town or a little village, whatever you want to call it. And you start out with your player board and you start out with a couple of workers. Each worker can do their own action, which, you know, you have builders, you have
recruiters,
and you just have standard workers, and I think there might be another one, I don't remember.
Any worker can get money.
Right.
The builders can build, the recruiters can recruit.
Right.
There's a third kind of worker, which is escaping me now. And then there's your party, which is essentially you could assemble however many workers you want, and then you can go below.
Right. So basically, yeah, you build your little buildings, you build your town, you get money, you know, you need the money to build, blah, blah, blah. You also can...
Farming,
harvesting. But anybody can do that, too.
Oh, okay.
I believe. But yeah, when you go and, you know, you're building all your buildings above the surface, you know. But like Brian said, when you go on an adventure, you need at least two guys, but you usually want to bring more. And this is where this game really shines, in my opinion, because you draw a card off the below deck, and it has just six random numbers on the bottom of it. You roll the die. Say you roll a 3, okay, 3 is number 700, or, you know, 216. So now you pull out the book, you find scenario 216, and you read that. And it's almost like it turns into an RPG where it's like, okay, you come across this, and your options are, do you stay and help the lady, or do you, you know, steal her shit and run, you know? And based on what you do and what you roll and...
You have to, like, say, if...
Oh, because you got the little symbols, and you got a roll to see if you can accomplish what you decided to do, and then you get the rewards based on what you decide to do.
Yeah, each character has a die face. That's like the minimum you can roll, and like say some will have 2. So one might have a 2, and it'll have a little lantern underneath it. So if you roll a 2 or better, you have 1 lantern. If you roll a 4 or better, you might get 2 lanterns. And you have to go through each character and roll until you see how many lanterns you end up with. And the success is, like, say if it's a success 9, you need 9 lanterns to get the best stuff. If you fail, you can also extend your workers for extra lanterns, but then they go into the hospital, and then you have to kind of nurse them back to health, which means essentially you lose workers. That is, the game would have been fun when you're just building buildings and collecting points and harvesting food. It would have been, you know, in the Agricola vein. But when you add that below thing, it totally changes the face of the entire game. Because you can ostensibly play the whole game above. Build a building, get some points, get some corn, and do some other stuff. And
well,
then,
that's the thing. Most of the harvesting comes from below.
That is true. I forgot about that. But you're essentially building a civilization above ground, and then you're building a little town below. But in order to be able to build, you have to build plots, and that's you go on adventure. If you succeed, now your plot's there. Now the next turn, you can buy a below building and build it there. It's such a good game. It was one of those games I always thought, like, yeah, I keep hearing it's really good. Looks like it could be kind of fun. Looks a little lighthearted, and it is. I mean, the scenarios end up being like, oh, you come across a Yeti, and he stubbed his toe. Do you want to give the Yeti some bandages and help him? Which, you know, you can easily roll a 4, and you might get an apple and a 2 coins. Oh, that's pretty good. Or you can be a jerk. You could steal the stuff from the Yeti, and now you've got 3 coins, a mushroom, and 2 fish. But you also lose 1 reputation, so you go... Because there's different ways to score points. You score points from your buildings, you score points from your workers, you score points from doing adventures. You also score points from reputation. It's just, there's a lot of different things to manage. There's a lot of options.
Yeah, you score points from the farming, too, because the more different things you can harvest and put on the bottom of your track, the higher point values you get for the ones you stack into there.
Also, more money you get at the start of every round. Because there's only 7 rounds, but... Depending on how many workers you have, I mean, you can do a lot of things as you get more workers or as you get more buildings. And as another way to rest your players is to have more beds. It's just...
That's another really neat way to do it.
It's one of those games where it's like, it's got a lot of similar basic mechanisms from games you've played before, assuming you've played these types of games, but... It's sort of like it grabs the best elements of like 7 or 8 different genres and kind of like form fits them all together into this new game that, and the storytelling is fantastic. It's got so much potential for more. And here's, and just to kind of break away for a second, apparently these games are starting to get attention of Hollywood because
what?
I forget what studio it is. I read this a couple days ago. Some studio just paid kind of a crazy amount of money. Not a crazy amount, but for this event, in my opinion, kind of a crazy amount of money for the TV and movie rights to TV, movie, and publishing for books, comics, etc. for Settlers of Catan.
I'm not surprised about that.
A game that I love, but has no story.
You're trying to settle the island of Catan.
There's not a single character named in the game, though.
They're called meeples.
That's true. Okay, fine. The robber exists. He's a guy.
That's true.
But I'm saying, like, above and below, the story elements are already sort of there. All you got to do is name the fish guy, and you got a character.
Bill
the fish guy. But yeah, this game is so... It's one of those games that's like been on my mind since we played it. I'm like, we got to play that again. That game was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
And I hate to do this because we only played it one time, but I'm so like looking forward to playing it again. I'm giving it a 9.
Oh, I was going to give it a 9 all day. If I played it one more time, I might have even given it a 10.
I might have given it a 14.
Yeah. So above and below is, yeah, by far, above and below, you need to get that game.
Yeah, it's, and I think it's a $50 game. Sounds pricey, but in the realm of these types of games, very affordable.
In the realm of these types of game, that's about average, but this one comes with so many scenarios. Like, literally, there's over 200 scenarios in that book, and they can easily...
You might see 10 of them in the game.
Yeah, they can easily add another one. You know what I mean? Another book with a whole new set of scenarios. It's really kind of awesome. So, so after that one, that's when we did the parade one, and then we took a little bit of a probably about 10-minute break, and then...
We split
the groups up, and this is where it got awesome for me, because the same guy that we played above and below with also brought Mechs vs. Minions, which is League of Legends board game.
It's the gigantic miniatures board game based in the League of Legends universe. The only thing is, it's not available in stores, so the only way to get it is to order it from the website of the people who created League of Legends.
Yeah.
So, and it, because of that, because there's no retail incentive for the game, it's $70.
It's $74.99 with $5 shipping, so it's $80 to your door.
Right, but if you saw the box in store, it would be $120 easily.
This game, well, yeah, like you said, it's huge, but by far the best miniatures I've ever seen for a game in my life.
I will second that, even though I didn't get the chance to play it. And Jeff, at one point, he nudged me. He goes, "This game's amazing." I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, "Well, I think you need to go buy it then." He's like, "Shut up, I might."
Yeah, we're all pretty much thinking about doing it, even though we've gotten to know the guy that brought it, and he's actually going to be joining our group here, so we can play his whenever we want. And he said there's a ton of scenarios in the box, and he's only played a handful of them because his group kind of fell apart. So,
well, here's the deal: I didn't get a chance to play it, so I want you to kind of tell me what the deal is with this game.
Well, that's the plan. Basically, every scenario is laid out, almost like a Imperial Assault or any of those D&D tile type of games. And there's different tiles in the game, and you set up the scenario. We had three of us, and we just did the scenario where you got to get the bomb from one side of the fucking board to the other. And this is where the game gets interesting, because it's got the standard spawn points for the enemies, and they spawn every turn, and you have your turn and they move, whatever. But I want to say with the three-player game, I want to say you flip five cards out and you decide, okay, I want that one. Okay, I'll take this one. Okay, I'll take this one. And then the first player actually gets a second card, and then the last one gets discarded. After about the third round, there's now a timer on that. So you flip those five cards out. Boom. Now you don't really get to think about what you want. You really got, because you got like 30 seconds for everyone to pick their cards, or no one gets nothing, which is kind of neat. And what you have in front of you on your player board is you have a board with six slots. So when you take a card, you put it into one of your slots. And then when your turn comes, you run that program. You do those turns in order. So if your first one is...
So it's like Scythe then, a little bit.
No.
No, not at all. If your first card says move to, you move to. The next one says turn 90 degrees, you turn 90 degrees. The next one says you shoot in front of you, you shoot in front of you. So you really got to plan out your program in order to take out the most amount of
minions. Do you have time to do that, though?
Once it's set, it's set.
No, I mean, because you said you have 30 seconds to pick your
power. Once you pick your cards,
you have a minute to like look it over and go, all right, well, because I was sitting there thinking, if you actually go, all right, move to, just placing cards in there, and then you're like, all right, I'll move to, now turn 90 degrees, and I'm shooting at nothing because I'm shooting off the board.
There was a time when Jeff took a damage card that turned, because in this game, direction you're facing matters. You can't, because you turn 90 degrees, now you're not facing anybody, you ain't shooting duck. But there was a card that damaged Jeff, turned him facing off the board. So now when he went to run his program, first thing he does, move forward. Well, I can't do that. Turn 90 degrees to your right. Boom. Now he's facing back towards the other way. Now shoot. There ain't no one there. Like, you kind of can get screwed out of an entire fucking turn. Sounds like it would be annoying, but it's kind of... Oh, it's just so awesome. Because yeah, then, really like, when
to play this game,
there's, though, like, little oil spots on the board, and when you land on that, you just slide all the way through to the end. Enemies do the same thing. And then so, but it's funny because all you got to do is get this bomb from here like 10 fucking spaces forward and you can pull it every turn, like 1, 2, 3. But at the end of every turn, anyone that's adjacent to a minion takes a damage. And the bomb only has like 3 health. So you kind of got to keep the guys away from the bomb as well. It's, we only played the one scenario. It was an absolute blast. The game is probably one of the best well-made games I've ever seen as far as components go.
Well, here's the thing.
It was super fun. And everyone, the three of us, plus we were telling Mike about it, and like all of us are ready to throw down $80 to get our own copies because the game is that fucking just cool.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Super Dungeon Explorer is supposed to mimic an 8-bit dungeon crawl. And I think it does a pretty good job of that. From the one time we played it, and again, we need to play it a few more times.
Yeah.
But just from what you're telling me, this sounds like a video game style board game that's successful in recreating that experience because it's made by people who made the video game. And they pretty much just figured out all the moves that are in the console or PC game and translated them to cardboard and plastic with card play, which is... Now I'm super pumped. We should go get it right now.
It's ridiculous how just neat it is, And again, I might change my tune when, the next game we get it and my program gets stuck and I'm just spinning 360 the whole time. Who knows? It could happen. Because when you take damage, you got to roll to see which slot that damage goes into. And now when you draw a card, you don't get the effect. Some of them say repair. You just, now you can discard that and the damage card. But they also have power-ups. Like, there's one that's like, okay, shoot forward in front of you. And then there's, you power up that one with another card of the same type. Now you get to do what the beefier one is. And you can power everything up to 3 times. So, you can literally destroy, or if you're facing the wrong way, you're just an idiot.
It's going to sound weird because I didn't get a chance to play this game. I forfeited my chance to play this game, to play the game we're going to talk about next.
Well, you're going to talk about it next.
Right. But I think I love this game.
I absolutely loved this game. Right there with Above and Below, playing it one time, had loads of fun. I'll give it a 9 easily. I could probably, again, it's one of those games I could probably easily give this game a 10, but I want to play it some more first.
All right. Well, while we're on the topic of playing games that mimic video games, the last game of that day I played, which is a game I've been hearing a lot about as well, similar to Mechs vs. Minions, from Renegade Games. It's called Clank. Honestly, I saw a couple reviews of it. I'm like, yeah, it looks all right. A lot of people seem to like this game. Here's the deal with Clank. Each player starts with a hand of 10 cards. Your basic, because it's a deck builder, / dungeon crawl. Imagine Ascension or the DC deck builder crossed with Ghosts and Goblins from 8-Bit Nintendo. And that is the baseline of how the game works. every character meeple starts at the very top of the castle. There's a dragon in the castle somewhere or under the castle somewhere, and he's got a hoard of treasure in these tunnels. So you play your five cards, you lay them out in front of you, and they'll have little boots on them for movement, little swords on them for attack, and a little blue number on them for buy, to buy better cards. There's one throwaway goblin skeleton character that's like, takes one sword to kill, and it's worth $2. So you accumulate money so you can buy stuff when you get to the market underground, because that's where you get the backpack, because you can only carry one, like, I forget what they're called, but like, we'll just say premium items. Unless you have the backpack, then you can carry two. And the premium items are worth like 20 points, 25 points. So you move through the maze. If you get into the ice caverns, you're stuck and you have to fight your way out. But there might be a clue in there that might be worth some points. Might be a small item that you can carry, like a helmet or whatever. But yeah, you play your five cards and you figure out the best way to move deeper into the dungeon and collect the most treasure. The timer of the game starts when the first person exits the underground. Well, first of all, I should say there are cards that have what's called clank on them. When you add, like, say if you have a card that says +2 clank, you put two of your colored cubes into the pot. And then I forget what point it was, but there's a bag with all black cubes, and that's the dragon. And when the dragon effect comes into play, you throw all the cubes in the pot, go in the bag, and then you draw however many cubes the board says. And it keeps going up and up and up as you keep waking the dragon up. So the first time you only draw 3 cubes, boom. If you draw all black cubes, you're fine, but those cubes go away. So, and your cubes that are in the bag stay in the bag. The more cubes you keep adding, the greater the chance you get damage. Every character has 10 health. The more of your color cubes you add to your track, the less health you have left. But again, the timer starts when the first person exits the dungeon. As that person's going back towards the top of the castle, you also have to find your way out. So you want to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into the underground to get the best treasure, to get the most points. But if you get stuck down there, you die and you lose everything, so you get no points. If you come above ground but don't get out of the castle, you get to keep your points, but you don't get the bonus at the end, which was worth 20 points. So it's essentially a race to get out of the castle with the most treasure.
And so it depends how greedy you want to be.
Yeah, it's got a deck-building aspect. It's got a dungeon crawl aspect. It's got a push-your-luck element. There are certain dungeons where you can get stuck down there. You have to, like, you can buy a key to get through the better paths, but you have to unlock all the doors. Super fun. I totally underestimated how much fun this game is, because it totally felt like Ghosts and Goblins. Like, I'm sitting there, like, I'm buying, here's the Sword of Destiny. It's got +4 power, so you can fight the big monster down there and get the awesome treasure, but it also adds 5 clank, which sucks, because when you get to, like, say, 8, the dragon wakes up. Now you gotta draw 5 cubes out of the bag. You're hoping that it's yellow and green and not blue, because if you're blue, you want your opponents to die first. So you can die by getting eaten by the dragon, you can die by getting stuck underground, or you can get injured. If you get out of the underground, the villagers will save you. The dragon can still attack you when you're above ground. Super fun game. Stupidly fun. And the board's double-sided, so there's the easy side where the paths are kind of linear and the market's dead center. Or on the other side, there's the hard side where each market is spread out underground. The paths are much harder to navigate. And the clock at the very top, because, like I said, the first person to get out starts the counter clock. So, like, on the easy side, first guy out will count down, like, 4 rounds at the end of the 4th round. And it's not like other games where the 4th round or the 4th spot is reached and everybody gets one last turn. If the guy that gets out first gets to that 4th spot, game's over. You count up your points, and you lose or win based on how much you got. So we're playing this game. It was me, this guy Chris, and this woman Bambi, and she's like sitting there. I saw Chris come out of the thing. He starts making his way, and he came out all the way near the entrance, so he only had to go up like 2 spots to get out of the castle. I'm all the way at the other end, so I'm just like, oh god, I gotta get out of here. So I come out of the castle because I'm like, I at least want to live. She's still underground digging around for treasure, and she's calling me a wuss. She's like, oh, yeah, you're going to be a wuss just like Jason or whoever the other guy is. She's like, he always leaves first. He's a wuss. She's like, I'm staying out here for the best stuff. Naturally, she lost, but I just thought it was funny that it was literally, it was the equivalent of sitting around playing multiplayer like Contra or Ghosts and Goblins and going, yeah, you suck. No, you suck. It was super fun. Super rad game. It's totally, it was not even on my radar. Now it's on my, I have to eventually get this game because I can almost guarantee everybody else will love it as much as I did. Again, only one playthrough. I want to play the more difficult scenario to see how ridiculously hard it is. I'm going to give this one an 8.
Nice.
Because I do think, especially the easier side, because the paths are so set in stone, I feel like you're going to need expansions for this game to really last. But it's already got, I think, one or two out. But it is, at least in the short term, super fun game. So, solid 8 with potential to go higher.
Sounds fun.
It is super fun.
I can't remember and if I've ever seen it or not, because I might be confusing it with... what's that one with the goblins? Gears and Goblins or...
Gears
the and... The white box. It's got... You got to build stuff. I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Goblins Incorporated?
Yeah. That's what I... That's what, every time I hear Clank, that's just what I think of. So, anywho, throughout the day, as these raffles are going, the first thing that I decided to grab... I won right there. Which expansion is that? Oh, it was a Dominion expansion. And if you recall, a few weeks ago, we just... reviewed Dominion, the base set. I still have the Seaside expansion we didn't talk about.
That's actually two expansions in one box.
Right. I can't read it, though. Guilds and Cornucopia. And there's also... That was the first thing that I won as far as games go, and I believe that was medium. And then I also got a promo, which you just threw down. So I figured, screw it. I'm on a Dominion roll here. So they had just a stack of promo cards for Dominion. I'm assuming it's just a tiny expansion. I don't know what card is in there, but whatever. So I basically got, I guess you could say, three expansions for Dominion over throughout the day. And then, because we're in there all the time, they're super cool. And after we left, they drew our names again. Well, they drew my name, and I won yet another game. So when I went to go pick up my books the other day, I grabbed Nitwit by Z-Man Games. It's basically... I'm not super pumped because it's made by the guy who designed Pandemic, and Pandemic's not exactly my favorite game. It's kind of just okay. Like, I get what he was trying to do, but I feel like Defenders of the Realm did it way better.
Yep.
But anyway, it's a game about knitting, and I'm going to knit myself to the victory in this thing once we start playing it, because I don't know. It just seems like an interesting... topic, I guess, is whatever. And then I also picked up, because there's 30% off or something like that for the day, so I grabbed Eminent Domain from Tasty Minstrel, because Brian has about 6 Tasty Minstrel games and they're all fucking awesome. So I'm like, I want a Tasty Minstrel game. So instead of buying a worker placement resource management game like every other Tasty Minstrel game I've played, I grabbed their only deck builder. I haven't played it yet, but either way, I'm still pumped because Tasty Minstrel games have never let me down.
Exactly, which is why the game that I won is probably the dumbest thing ever. So we'll see. We'll eventually play it. It's a small card game called Knights of the Dinner Table. I'm sure it's not that awesome.
I thought you got hacked.
Hacked?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Oh.
Or hack or whatever. And then I also took advantage of the sale and got the brand newest reprint, also from Tasty Minstrel Games, formerly on Rio Grande or something like that, the Reiner Knizia Egyptian Worker Placement game, because I love worker placement games, Amun-Re, where you basically commit people to build temples and pyramids and such. But
so Amun-Re or Amun-Ra? Because Amun-Ra was an actual person.
Maybe it is Amun-Ra. I don't know. It's Amun-Re. I assumed it was Amun-Re, but it could be Amun-Ra. I don't know. But I remember when I brought it to the counter, Lori was like, ooh, good choice. I was like, I certainly hope so, because I was thinking about getting Scoville, which is another Tasty Minstrel game, because I love Tasty Minstrel games. I do have like six of them. But yeah, Amon Ray is also a Tasty Minstrel game, so I feel like I split the difference. We'll see. Supposedly it's a hardcore Euro classic, so we'll see. And eventually we'll podcast it, and then you'll find out if we think it is the classic that it's supposed to be.
Yeah, pretty much. Other than that, I think that pretty much wraps up our
tabletop day, which yes. I think they should start doing once a month.
I don't know about that, but
once every week, then
6 months maybe.
Once a month.
If they're gonna be raffling off $500 worth of board games, they can't sustain life that long.
They had two boxes full of Evolution Climate promos that Lori told me that she didn't even know if they were going to give them away, because the tournament they were going to do for it ended up falling through. So she may still have those, and maybe I'll talk her into giving one to me.
Sweet and dope. So yeah, there you have it. International Tabletop Day. If you have not gone yet, or if you're not really into gaming and you're looking for a time to do it, that's the best time, but you don't want to wait another year. Just check out your local game shop. Chances are they're going to be demoing something, or they're going to have games open for you to play. If you're always interested in gaming and you've never done it, you really need to. I have yet to come across somebody who's not willing to show you how to play their favorite game. So just go on out there and make it happen. Cap'n.
Yes.
Right? Yes. All right, so that is our show for today. You can find me on Twitter at XSourceNX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. And you can find all of the reviews for all these awesome games at ReviewAndRoast.com, which we also share onto our Facebook at Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast. But you guys know all this, and Brian's got something else.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've been doing some blogging on our website, because it's cross-promoting on the SouthgateMediaGroup.com. blog, or they're fixing it. I don't know what the heck's going on, but my first post is up on their website as well, and another one goes live tomorrow, which is about Tabletop Day, and I wrote another one this morning, which will go up next Monday, which might be last Monday by the time you hear this. No idea. But yeah, southgatemediagroup.com is also carrying my blog post as well as our website, because we're trying to build the empire here, so I can go dun 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 dun,
dun. Dun, 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 dun. Quit my job.
Working in my underwear, playing games. Yeah.
Well, that was a nice image to leave you guys with, so we are out of here for the day.